I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold on, I'm just washing my hands.
That's the end. Hold on, I'm just washing my hands.
Alright, washing my hands.
Podcast. Oh!
Welcome back to TF3's The Weekend Preview, where we also answer your Q&As. We've got some good ones in today, so it's well worth you thinking about what you want to ask further. On today's show, it's the best lineup we could get. Dave O'Brien is back.
Hello, hello, hello.
Taking a big sip of whatever. This is the best glimpse you're going to get of him in a while because Dave's moving and doing all sorts of stuff for the next few weeks.
A busy, busy man.
Yeah. Speaking of busy men, Chris Hennage is also here.
Good afternoon. And
good evening and good night. And of course, Nico Morales, who's over in Florida. You are in the same state currently, Nico, as Adam Boltwood.
I'm in the same city, some would say. So, you know.
Are you? I didn't realize he was in. Which city are you in?
Orlando. I mean, I think he's staying in Kissimmee, which is like a little suburb of Orlando, but he's pretty close. So,
yeah, he's been sending us all sorts of stupid shit from all over the world. Apparently, Orlando's a good place, right?
I think it is. I've grown up the majority of my life here, so I think it's all right.
As they say, Orlando. Dave just messed something up. Anyway, let's get straight down to the podcast. There's lots of good stuff to come up on today's show, including previews of the weekend. Dave, it's probably best that we talk a little bit about Liverpool-Manchester United to start out. You're pretty confident here that Manchester United could get a comprehensive win Yes, Dave.
Yes.
Fucking hell. Over your close rival. That's kind of the point of the podcast. Over their close rivals. Dave, can you talk a little bit about Manchester United for me? Oh, no, Dave's already gone. Brilliant.
There you go.
Dave's hello. Back. There yeah, you Dave, can you talk a little bit about
how people are going to love the audio on this one.
Brilliant. Manchester United, Jesus Christ. Manchester United versus Liverpool, Dave, you're confident that Liverpool are going to lose comprehensively as well. You think there's going to be some goals that you can even predict?
Yeah, I think there's some issues in Liverpool's midfield that's become very apparent over the last few weeks. I think the lack of pressure, the lack of Adam Lallana is a real problem for Liverpool. Think defensively they're very weak, but it's not their back four. I think this analysis of their back four being poor is actually not the case. It's their midfield. There's no pressure in midfield. I think we've seen three of the same goals or three of the same chances created in exactly the same way through Liverpool not pressing in midfield. You go to the Aguero one was the first one. Aguero clean for own goal straight through the middle of the centre half after Kevin De Bruyne has so much space in midfield. The same thing happens, obviously, against Newcastle. Jonjo Shelvey wins the ball back. No pressure on Jonjo Shelvey. Picks his spot, plays the through ball. Joselu eventually bundles it in. Then on the flip side of that, you go to the Leicester City game. Same thing happens with Jamie Vardy when he wins the penalty. You go back and watch that. Andy King wins the ball back. No pressure. And I think it's a big problem for Liverpool is they lack this intensity that Jurgen Klopp brought. You look at the stats. When Jurgen Klopp came to the Premier League the first sort of 6 months he was there, they were leading the tackles in the opposition's half by maybe like 1.5 times everyone else. Now they're joint top, they're ranked top with Manchester United, which is quite interesting in its own self. They were bottom three last season. But I think it's intensity, it's the players. Wijnaldum, I don't know what he's doing. When I watch Liverpool, I really question what he's doing. Against Newcastle, I think in that second half, he completed 8 passes. For a central midfielder that were dominating the ball, that is absolutely atrocious. So I think Liverpool need to get Adam Lallana back and have a bit more intensity, but there's a real opportunity for United to catch them.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, a lot of people, Dave, do you think there's a bit of a... What I find unusual is, especially in the analysis, is again, people are hesitant to criticise Jordan Henderson. And as good a player as he is, as promising as he is, it seems like there's a little bit of a protectionist vibe around the Liverpool man, even though, and it's part, we know it's partly because he's the captain of Liverpool. We know it's partly because he is in this Gerrard role that, or whatever this role is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be a Gerrard role, but people seem to call it that. And people seem to be saying, well, Emre Can's not got his contract done. You know, Wijnaldum isn't doing much, which is obviously evident as well. You know, there's other issues in there. No one seems to be talking about Henderson just herring around the pitch as a captain, fantastic, if he's trying to be that, and, you know, making massive gaps in that midfield.
I think positionally he's atrocious. He's really, really bad, but so is Emre Can, and so is Wijnaldum. You know, there's times when Liverpool, you look at their midfield and it almost looks like 1-1-1-1 instead of being like one defensive midfielder, two ahead. And that's in the same plane of the pitch. And, you know, Nico could probably go into this a little bit more. But positionally, in terms of if you're looking at the best managers in the world, the zonal guys, the guys like Nagelsmann that are taking the game to the next level, Thomas Tuchel, if you have three central midfielders that are pretty much in the same plane in a horizontal sense in midfield, that's absolutely mental, Nico, right?
Yeah. Yeah, completely right. I mean, Dave hit the nail on the head there with the positional issues in midfield, and that's something I obviously discussed in what I wrote about Liverpool, is that it's really not the back four. It's about putting the back four in difficult positions, and how often does your system do that? And continually criticizing Dejan Lovren or Joel Matip, even though he doesn't seem to get much criticism at all, but the other two, Klavan and Matip, seem to enjoy the majority of the criticism. I think the midfield positioning that Dave is talking about, in addition to how Klopp uses his fullbacks, is really the issue, because you're putting these defenders in extremely difficult situations, and then you have the match of the day analysis by Redknapp and Carragher, which sometimes is good and sometimes misses the point, because they blame the positioning of the defenders far too often, because no matter what, these defenders have to make sort of a 50-50 decision, and in some cases it's right, in some cases it's wrong, but it's very difficult to do that when you have like this hyper-aggressive, poor positional midfield that's always trying to win the ball back in these weird situations, when they should be more conservative. They should have a better idea of when they need to go get the ball. And that's exactly actually what Dave said, which is where they miss Adam Lallana, and they're going to miss Sadio Mane, because those are the guys that catalyze the press. Those are the guys that understand the correct opportunities to go get the ball, as opposed to trying to go get the ball all the time and then leaving their defense exposed. It's weird from Jurgen Klopp.
Certainly a tricky one. At the same time, it's partly the odds that Jurgen Klopp plays. And, you know, we've spoken before on this podcast about the sort of, you know, poker style of putting all your chips at any one point on the way that your team play. And I think at times Klopp does play the odds, and his football kind of bets on people making mistakes. I mean, that is what part of gegenpressing pressing does, is you're pressing. Everyone is doing that correctly.
I think, like Mourinho, the two styles of Jurgen Klopp and Mourinho are actually somewhat similar, in the sense that I think you were on the right track there in saying that their system, the mantras that they've become famous for, looks to provoke mistakes. With Mourinho, it's a little bit more conservative, in the sense that they allow the opposition to come onto them, and after they've engaged a certain part of the pitch, after they have the ball in a certain part of the pitch, then they go for a really aggressive press, because it's more likely that they're going to get the ball in those areas because of the field, the relevant size of the pitch is so compact. Whereas Jurgen Klopp is a little bit more offensive in these actions, and that's why his system is so dependent on intelligent players like Adam Lallana and in the past at Dortmund with different players, to go ahead and recognize what situations you need to go get the ball.
Press.
Yeah,
but exactly. It's also dependent then on what looked at Dortmund like a pentagon in midfield.
Right.
Which was much more effective, and almost sort of it took away from you playing the odds, because you were much more likely to be covering those spaces, whereas Liverpool don't necessarily or can't necessarily play that, not only because of the way that formations maybe changed over the years, but also because of the players that he has to enact that. And that's why Sadio Mane is such an important player, why people like Coutinho higher up the pitch, who became much better at tackling, also were much better players. At least that's what I see watching week in, week out. It's going to be an interesting weekend. We're going to be predicting a little bit later, using Fan League, everything that's going to be happening over the weekend. Chris is going to be reading out some of the fixtures, and we'll be following up on that. Anyone enjoy the international break? I mean, Gordon Strachan's been talking about genes. Chris, surely genes have got something to do with qualifying for the World Cup.
Not the way he articulated it. No, I think
the point about them being smaller maybe makes a bit of sense when you look at the goals they conceded against Slovenia. They weren't great from set pieces. The second one in particular was just awful. But I think Gordon Strachan's a good example of a very good player that doesn't transition to a very good coach. I've listened to a fairly extensive interview with him and Graham Hunter, in which he outlined some of his own development techniques, some of which I thought actually had relevance even today. The notion that, you know, if you play in an academy or a training session, you maybe get, you know, 20, 30 touches of the ball, but he would go home and play against a wall in his house and he would have hundreds, thousands of touches in the space of half an hour, which will improve your technique. It is about repetition, I think. That sadly isn't enough goal to extrapolate outwards and make him a very good international manager. And if you look at his squad selections, look at the way that Scotland team plays a lot of the time, I think, honestly, it's a blessing for them that he's gone. And I mean that with the greatest of respect to what he achieved as a player, because I don't think he's cut out for management at any stage. And yeah, that's before you dive any deeper on him as a person.
Yeah, I mean, he's hardly blessed with the most talented squad, but it certainly was. I think in many ways he was trying to deflect away from what the players didn't achieve. Of course, Wales also didn't make it. Dave, we spoke a little bit about this the other night with Chris on the podcast, and the fact that they haven't made it will be disappointing for them, because they'll have seen other nations of a similar size, a similar sort of development or development path, such as Iceland, trying to make it as well and making it. Maybe Iceland have got a slightly better system. Maybe they've got something which seems a little bit more coherent. Dave O'Brien left. Brilliant.
This new Dave app, O'Brien's honestly, back. The Skype new app, right? The buttons are all in such awkward places. I keep hanging up when I'm trying to turn my mic off. It's frustrating the hell out of me.
You know what, Dave? I have a real problem with that as well. And you, Skype, fix it, because your buttons are not clear at all. We're not sponsored by you guys, so we can say what the hell we want. We'll FaceTime next time. Dave, Iceland, and obviously the Compass Mentis way they've gotten through, it's been... it seems as if they've planned very far forward, and now we can join the dots looking back.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, you compare it to Wales and how Wales haven't really built on what they did at the European Championships. It's quite sad. You know, they've taken a step back in their development now, not getting to the World Cup. Obviously, Gareth Bale did miss some of the qualifying, but at the same time, you can be reliant on one player, but when he's not there, you've got to be able to, you know, pick up the wins, and that was ultimately their problem, is they just couldn't do it without Gareth Bale. So it's quite sad, because I did want, you know, you want to see the same performance that they had at the European Championships, getting to the semi-finals. That was nice to see. But at the same time, you've got to win your easy games at home. And unfortunately, that's what's cost them. So I think it's going to be a stepward back before they can go forward in a way. But, you know, I'd quite like Chris Coleman to continue as manager. It seems to be doing quite well there. The players like him and so forth. So I think it's on to the next one, really. It's on to the next European Championships, unfortunately, for Wales.
You got to feel a little bit sorry for Chris Coleman. He certainly did look upset post game, and he's a good football man. Kristen, you wrote a little bit, I think, in the last Euros about Iceland and tracked some of their, I guess, progress through the years, and speaking to me and a number of other people on quite a few great shows during that time about the development of Iceland. Do you think this is just a continuation of that, or they laid the right foundations? And then, you know, all of this is expected.
I think the momentum they built from the start of the millennium has carried through to this cycle as well, because you've got to remember that the tournaments are only 2 years apart, which might sound like a huge chasm in terms of, you know, time and everything. But actually, I think when the qualification stages are so close together, it can help. They've got a very good squad. I mean, they've lost obviously Aaron Johansson to the US, but they still have quality, and the system hasn't changed. That's the thing. Because it took so long to put together the infrastructure in Iceland, I think that means they've had a sustained period of success because of it, in qualifying for the Euros and the World Cup.
Pretty nice. So of course, also, Dave, during the international break, we've had a lot of time to consider what's going on at different clubs as well. Is it Jupp Heynckes that's been brought back at Bayern? It certainly is, it's an interesting appointment, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a strange one. Ancelotti, I think, is a very, very good manager, but he's a bit of a laissez-faire. He lets his assistants take training and so forth, and obviously that's not what's out with the Bayern players. I don't like what the Bayern players have done. I think that's terrible. They've basically got him sacked. The five senior players have gone to the board. We could probably reel them off potentially now of the players that allegedly would be there. That's Lewandowski, that's Arjen Robben, that's Thomas Müller, that's Frank Ribery. These are players that are supposed to be captains in the dressing room and supposed to be taken by Munich to the next level. That's the sad thing for me. Not that he's been sacked, is that these players have turned on him, which is, you listen to Ronaldo talk about Ancelotti, listen to Ramos, Xabi Alonso, they're all very supportive. So I think this is where player power and small players, Arjen Robben and Frank Ribery, who aren't going to be there for much longer, have kind of pushed him out, unfortunately, and it looks like Nagelsmann will be the guy next year. But again, it's just a strange one. I thought they would have done well second season with Ancelotti. Champions League, that's what Ancelotti loves to win. That's what Bayern want. But of course, they're bringing back Yuppie Boy, who's won the treble last time. But again, very old. And has he, has his methods been outdated? I don't think so. But it's just going to be a challenge for Bayern. And, it's not good. How Thomas Müller was speaking to the media and so forth was, it seems like they had a personal issue that he wasn't playing last season. And that has now cost him his job.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, once you lose the dressing room, it certainly is an interesting one. People are talking about secret training sessions, all sorts of things. And also, I think there's some interesting chat about the fact that Bayern are now sort of backing the players because they don't really have much other choice. But actually, these guys will probably be on their way out very soon, have caused quite a few problems. And maybe the reason that Hankers has been brought back in, Chris, is because they want him to steady the ship and set up another... It's almost like keeping a fallow field, if you like, in farming. They want him to steady things. They want him to make sure that everything that they want as part of the DNA of the team is brought back in, and then they can bring in yet another manager in the Pep Guardiola mode. But you would have hoped that they could have continued Pep Guardiola's ways, because it seemed like there was the whole thinking and the reasoning that they brought him in was to get that sort of structure that then they could build on.
There's a cynical argument to be made that actually in replacing Heinkes with Guardiola, they didn't actually evolve that much in the first place because they didn't win a Champions League. That sounds, I know, like a very harsh metric to judge a coach by. But I do think you hit the nail on the head when you said that there's a stability in bringing someone like him in because he understands the team. His ideas actually weren't that far out at the time. And actually, I would say a lot of them still hold validity today and can be implemented today. I'll be curious to see how similar that team that won the treble is to the team that he puts out this season. And at the same time, it's very difficult to get a high caliber manager in October because a lot of them are already starting and well involved in their own projects. So why would you leave at that point? I think it gives them a period of time to decide which direction they want to take the club in, which I think sometimes we in football fail to grasp that actually taking an extra second, whether it's on the ball or making a decision for your manager, gives you so much more opportunity.
Yeah, certainly something I can understand. Of course, Nico, there's also them protecting the likes of Pep Guardiola, isn't there? Because obviously you've studied him a lot recently. Did it look like what Bayern were doing under Ancelotti was dissimilar from what was going on under Guardiola?
Yeah, very much so. And I think sort of the system broke away from Pep Guardiola's philosophy more so last year than this year. And I think he tried to transition it more towards, as Dave mentioned, the laissez-faire style that he likes to really play. And the best of what we saw at Real Madrid was sort of that free-flowing attack that a lot of those gifted, talented players can take advantage of in the final third. But I think the difference here, and I've said this before on this podcast, is that I think with each league, especially at the top, you have to sort of, in I don't want to build into the cliche that like you have to know the league and be a part of it from as a player or anything to really be successful in it. But I think there are elements of the Bundesliga, there are elements of the Premier League and La Liga and Serie A that are specific to how the majority of the teams play and things that you need to do in order to be successful in that. And if you look at sort of the last couple of defeats that Carlo Ancelotti had, the pressing actions that he was trying to enact were far different than the ones that Pep Guardiola did when he had his team and other teams of the past and other successful teams currently in the Bundesliga, and it wasn't good enough. And the players were sort of being asked to play this different type of football that didn't encompass an adequate pressing style or an adequate counter-pressing style or however you want to put it. And so I think with that, with him trying to implement his style of play that didn't really match up with the Bundesliga and match up with the players that at his disposal, I think that was really the downfall of his style at Bayern Munich.
A lot of people have crossed the border successfully between Germany and Italy, be it one way or the other, and it seemed like there are some good relations between the likes of Juventus and Bayern, considering some of the transfers they've had over the last few seasons. But yeah, it certainly was interesting to see the difference in Ancelotti. And obviously, I think maybe there's a different emphasis with Ancelotti that some of those players just didn't get, especially considering the establishments that he came from, has coached at, and probably will end up coaching again. It's been good, but now he's apparently taking 9 months out. And I tell you what else is different, Chris. It's the fact that Henkes has gone back to Bayern, obviously, and people are saying, a lot of people are backing it, saying it obviously brought a lot of success in that time. I think it's just over 5 years since he left. People reacting very differently, and obviously so, between Roy Hodgson and Henkes, but people mocked Hodgson for being old, but Henkes is coming out of retirement. Do you think this is a reputational thing, or sort of, because we don't know what Henkes is going to be like now, really, do we?
Well, I mean, it's not just them. I think was it Turkey that appointed the 72-year-old?
Yes, good point.
Luchescu as well. I think you have to be careful not to generalize. With the greatest of respect to Roy Hodgson, he doesn't have Jupp Heynckes's resume of achievements. And I think for that reason, it makes them vastly different quantities as managers. Hodgson goes in at Palace. I know I think he played there, didn't he? But he had never coached there, from what I can remember. I mean, I know the club billed it as him returning, but it was returning from a different kind of way that Heynckes is at Bayern. So I think, honestly, you hit the nail on the head when you said it's a stable pair of hands to ease a transition. That's what I think they want, whereas Palace are, to be frank, grasping at whatever they can to try and stay in the league, which is a far more desperate situation to be in.
Weirdly, stability in two different ways. But yeah, anyway, there's a lot of good other questions coming in. Wow, some really long questions. Thoughts on the following. Chris, how detrimental is the lack of a US World Cup qualification for the popularity, progression, and the evolution of the sport in the United States? That one is from Piotr Gala.
I think it's a good question. I think ultimately the US soccer fandom is not defined by the national team. I think it improves marginally when the World Cup's on, because fans can get invested in that tournament, and you will always get holdover from that. You'll always get fans that are swept in and stay with the game thereafter. But I think as long as the Bundesliga, as long as the Liga, the Premier League are readily available to fans on television, be it morning, noon or night, I think that ultimately that will help sustain the growth. I don't think it's
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Nico, he helped the national team lose to Trinidad and Tobago. How is that even possible? Steve McClaren could have beaten them with this US team.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the defeat to Trinidad and Tobago that sent the US out of the World Cup is a really difficult one to swallow. And as to how the US lost to Trinidad and Tobago, I think is a question that's maybe missing the point. I think I don't necessarily enjoy the fact that all of the post analysis after the fact of the US is like, you know, it completely changes whether the US wins this game, and that's not really how it should be. You know, would we be asking all of these existential questions about the US Soccer Federation and the development of US soccer had the result been different? And none of those questions should be dependent on one result. I think there's a lot wrong with how the U.S. is going about its talent identification, its talent development, and things within that. But at the same time, I don't think there is a country out there that's as large as the U.S. that has enjoyed a large amount of success on the international stage, because there are significant problems with how, you know, how you organize talent identification, how you organize a national team across a country that is so large. Because obviously, you know, in England, you have a club system that pretty much blankets the entire country and is able to identify talent on a very specific scale, because there are so many outlets for players to go ahead and enter the system. Whereas in the US, there's very few MLS clubs. They definitely don't encompass the US, and there are very few less prestigious clubs that are going to be able to identify talent and do that in a way that would allow people with, you know, low income or the ability not to participate in the pay-to-play system to develop. So, you know, it's a difficult thing to criticize, but I think much more goes into it than just the loss or the lack of qualification from this year's World Cup, because it's such a big problem that nobody has really figured out yet. And as much as people want to criticize the loss, which it should be criticized because the U.S. had an 83 or 93% chance of qualifying for this year's World Cup before the game, it isn't. I don't necessarily agree with the idea that, like, we need to ask all these questions and talk about, you know, as if everything is wrong and this is the culmination of everything is wrong because of one result.
Has anyone else seen this stuff about the UEFA Nations League? The four leagues for the UEFA Nations League have been confirmed, with the Netherlands snatching a top spot. It sort of tiers them in four different leagues. So it says here, teams will be split into four groups of three, with the group winners that can take... there's a whole load of weird things. It's hard to explain. Let's put it this way. It's tiered qualification, then split even further down. It looks, in theory, a good idea, Chris?
I honestly don't know enough about it to comment, if I'm really honest.
Yeah, good point. I'm not sure anyone does. How the lineups will be determined. The 55 participating teams are split according to their position with UEFA nation team coefficient rankings following the end of the European qualifications.
My issue with this sort of system, as I'm sort of briefly looking at it, is like you just mentioned there, they will be ranked or they'll be put into their different categories of division based on the UEFA ranking that they receive. I think a lot of people, as the American, as unfamiliar as I am with sort of college football in the United States, as the American system of college football works in sort of a similar way, like you get grouped or you have the opportunity to participate in a championship game based on a ranking that a entity is responsible for identifying. I think that can be a difficult pill for a lot of people to swallow, because it's not like FIFA and UEFA have been known for the most objective or the least corrupt entities on the entire world. So I think basing countries off a ranking that they receive from an organization that a lot of people see to be as corrupt, and then basing how, you know, you're going to advance in the tournament off those rankings is sort of a recipe for disaster. It's a recipe for corruption. It's a recipe for people to, I don't know, pay and manipulate their way into more favorable groups if they wanted to.
Not that we are saying they are paying or manipulating. That top
allegedly
just looks, well, the fact England are in the top group means that it's just a true system, Nico. How could the country that invented football not be in the top tier? I can't even finish that sentence. Dave, there's a good question here. Where do you see Ozil and Sanchez going besides any Premier League club? This comes after Wenger's comments that Ozil and Sanchez may well be sold in January. And also, obviously, on the back of improved defensive and of course, then league form. Hello. From Arsenal, Dave. Hello, welcome.
I think that there's some issues there of where they can go. I think Arsenal won't want to sell them in the Premier League, so maybe Juventus could pick up someone like Alexis Sanchez. Mesut Ozil's a bit of a different one, because if he's requiring £330,000 per week, there's a lot of clubs that may turn their back on there. Could be quite interesting for someone like Ozil to maybe play under Diego Simeone. I'd like to see that, because then, you know, you're thinking that is, you know, the massive critique of him is he doesn't work hard enough, but he will do that under Simeone. So that could be quite an interesting little mix, as well as, you know, Simeone with Alexis Sanchez. That'd be absolutely perfect. So there's amazing. A lot of clubs out there where it could be quite interesting for both players' careers. But again, this is the last big move for both of these guys, so they've got to be smart with this. They can't be, you know, messing about and, you know, not considering more than the money. I think that's the big thing here. It doesn't matter how much they get paid now. This is it. This is the last time that they can win the Champions League. So it's got to be a clever move. So they just got to really, really consider it. Maybe the Bundesliga could be quite good for someone like Mesut Ozil going to Bayern. You know, he's going to fit in with the guys there because he plays for the national team. So it's going to be an interesting period for those two players. But not Arsenal Football Club. What, how much have they spent combined for those players, and they're losing them on free transfers? Stupid management.
It won't be free, obviously, in January, though, Dave.
Yeah, but you're getting a fraction of what they paid.
Oh yeah, no. you'll get about
30 quid in this transfer market, if you think about it. What, you know, you've got players, you've got assets that you could have got rid of before. You know, they should have sold both players in the summer. I don't know why they didn't. Now they're going to get a pittance for them if they try and sell them. But what you will find is both of the guys won't move in January, and they'll go on free transfers. And that is the unfortunate life for our Arsenal fans.
Do you even really get that, or do they get like £30 in free bets or something? Do you know what I mean?
Put you in their shoes, right? Why would you sign for a club right now when you're going to get a massive signing on bonus when you move to the next club?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe because another club will offer you better wages. So in the short term, you'll also make that money. You know?
Yeah, but I don't think any club would come in and pay the amount that Arsenal are asking for those two players in January when they know that they can get them on a free transfer in the summer.
A couple of months later.
Yeah.
Although maybe, I mean, you know, there might be a couple of clubs out there that are thinking, well, you know, if we get an Ozil or a Sanchez, we might maybe secure qualification into the Champions League. You know, are we looking at an AC Milan or an Inter Milan here as well? Those two guys have been fairly flush recently. We might also be, I mean, imagine a Sanchez at Napoli, Nico.
I'd like to see, not necessarily Napoli, but I'd like to see Sanchez return to Serie A, because I think it is the league for him, especially at this age. And like Dave said, Mesut Ozil back to Germany, maybe Bayern Munich or Borussia Dortmund would be a good fit. So
I wouldn't mind seeing it. It wouldn't be terrible. I suppose he doesn't really fit, Dave, into a Juventus system. Is Dave hung up again, or is he just being really careful with his...
No, favorite? Skype is literally busting my balls today. I think Juve, both of the players, could be a good option. You know what Juve do with their contracts and signing players on free transfers and elongating players' careers, and we've got moves both for those guys.
It's not been great over the last few weeks for any clubs that are trying to ward off Juventus from any of their players. Emre Can being as non-committal as possible about a Liverpool contract, saying he doesn't know where Jurgen Klopp will
he's
be next
idiot.
Year because he doesn't know what he's thinking. Jurgen Klopp or Emre Can?
Emre Can. Why would you consider leaving Liverpool when you're not even like consistent at all? You literally play amazing one week and then you're terrible the next week. But you should work on that before earning some more money. That's what really pisses me off about players.
Is it money?
Why wouldn't he just earn more money? Why wouldn't he just, if he knows he's not that good, why wouldn't he just take the opportunity to
he needs to improve money? Himself as a player, not get more cash.
Get more cash.
But I mean, what if he can do both?
Fucking Mikey's.
Great question. What is, if you guys can answer that on Twitter, we'd love to know where the fuck Dave's keys are. Hey, they might be behind the lamp. Hey, Dave?
I think I've got them. It's all right.
Excellent. Where were they?
They were in my bag.
Sure.
First place that you should check.
Yes. There's a lot of other questions here. Dave is a fraud, says Jack McCormack. What are Spurs' chances at the Bernabeu?
Fuck off, Jack.
Good. Thanks, Dave, for littering this podcast with swear words. Chris, what are Spurs' chances at the Bernabeu?
Probably better than the last time they went there.
That's
the best way I could put it. I think I still have a lot of concerns about Spurs in terms of their defensive ability, but then at the same time, and I think you have to caveat this with the fact that Real Madrid are a much better side than Borussia Dortmund, I think the game is slightly more in favour of Spurs in the way that the dynamic will play out. I think the fact they won't have to maybe dictate things, they can be a bit more considered, is good. But at the same time, their opponents will be a lot less forgiving in terms of exploiting mistakes that they may make.
Nice. Of course, there is also a good question. I found another good question. It was a really good one as well. And then Twitter absolutely punked out on me. Dave, this one's a good question for you. You're out and about already. A question for Statman Dave. How are the studies going? And do you recommend getting coaching badges?
Yeah, I think they're good. It's interesting. The level one is more like you're teaching kids. So there's nothing technical or tactical about it. It's literally you've just got to do this to get through the door. But you do learn some stuff. Like what I found quite interesting was how when you're doing your session, it's not about coaching the group, it is about coaching the individual. So when you know, for example, you're doing a simple like piggy in the middle drill, you know, you're looking around, you're seeing.
Not sure you can call them piggies now, Dave, though, can you?
Okay, well, you know, basically that concept of a game, like a rondon with a guy in the middle.
Go on, Dave.
Shall I start that again? Do you want to just cut this out then?
No, it's good. Keep going.
You've just ruined my flow, Lawrence.
Yeah,
people like you make me fucking sick.
He still calls it a rondon instead of a rondo. It's incredible.
Yeah, kids are learning very directly from Dave. You're either a fat piece of shit or... Anyway, keep going, Dave.
Jesus. So back to my chain of thought. When you're coaching a group of players that are doing a passing drill with a single player in the middle, what's interesting is how you coach the players individually in that drill. So, for example, if a player's a bit weaker, you give him more touches, a player's stronger, you limit which side he's playing on, you say that he's got to play with his left foot, if he's right-footed or so forth. And that's the intricacy so far that I found quite interesting, is just that on a drill. How do you break it down for a single player? Obviously, with a group, if a group's doing well, it's easy to limit touches, it's easy to move the playing pitch bigger or smaller, but it's how do you coach a single player within a bigger organism, which I found interesting so far. Today I've got the child protection, something like that, part of the course. So that's going to be fun.
You got to protect those kids, Dave. And then, of course, having worked for the BBC, I have been CRB checked, so it turns out I'm safe. By not doing anything terrible, Dave. There's obviously also the interesting side. I think I heard a story the other day on another podcast. It might have been on The Continent. It might have been on The Ramble. And obviously it was told by Marcus Speller how individually the likes of Arsene Wenger was coaching, I think it was Abu Diaby and one other midfield player, because they weren't able. It was about transitioning. It was about taking the ball at your feet, turning and then running at the defence, and how he would get them to individually drill on that for the players who were less strong on it. And it was just interesting to sort of hear the way that Wenger went into that and was able to identify that as something that his midfielders needed as a quality. David, are you seeing a little bit more of the difficult side of coaching? Because obviously I think what a lot of people lack is, you know, obviously on FIFA you can sort of go, be nice to this player, you know, or, you know, be good to him. Like Football Manager, it's a bit different in real life, isn't it? When you know,
not for me, mate. My delivery was exceptional, top quality little sesh we did. So I'm happy with my progress so far. But I think the interesting side of that is Wenger's teaching his central midfielders to carry the ball. Ferguson was like, don't ever take anyone on in the central area. That's only wide players only.
Is it true that Mourinho also, for a very long time, sort of played a similar system, that he didn't like to keep the ball in midfield for too long?
Yeah, I think it's what those two managers have done quite well. It's kind of the adaptability with them. But yeah, Wenger, strange concept.
Mm. Do you think self-awareness is an important part of coaching, Dave?
Nah, not at all, mate. I think coaching, the biggest thing is confidence, right?
In many ways, yeah. You know what, Dave? You've been a breath of fresh air in this city.
Thanks.
Yeah. Let's move on. There are some other really good questions. I'm sure there are some kids, Dave, that listen to this podcast and want to be coached by you.
Maybe they'll have a lucky day and I'll just turn up out of nowhere.
Thoughts on Masonda's frustrated post on Instagram, says Luke Dawe. Seems a pretty accurate reflection on a lot of Chelsea Academy players, which seems like a shame because he seems to have a genuine passion and want to play for the club. Apparently, Masonda posted on Instagram, you sacrifice, you work hard, harder. You give more than what's expected and often more than you can because you love what you do and certainly more than you should. And what do you get back? Literally nothing. ... Done. However, with this being said, I will continue with the same dedication and commitment to this great game. Chris, I mean, you've certainly worked at a youth level, scouting players. You must see a fair bit of this frustration when a player gets stuck in a rut. We've spoken about some more senior players, and we've even worked with more senior players who feel like they're stuck in one place, want to move somewhere else. Do you think sometimes it can be counterintuitive to maybe air your grievances in public, especially when you are just starting out? I love when Chris is part of the conversation. Chris?
He's right.
Chris is gone. Nico, how about you?
I have not seen the Masonda thing or... Okay. Am I familiar with him in any sense?
Hello.
Great. This is the greatest podcast we've ever done.
Sorry, I cut out for a second there, but I caught the gist of the question, which is, there's an interesting sort of dynamic, and I've talked to some young players about this, that the notion that there's a period in your career where you're just craving that first taste, that first couple of minutes, maybe that first start, whatever. And then there becomes a point where, without wishing to sound insincere, that same little taste doesn't satisfy you anymore, that you want more, you want consistency, you want the chance to influence games and be a consistent part of something. And I think that's possibly the sort of bracket that Musonda and Gallagher and people like that have found themselves in, where they don't just want to play 20 minutes every couple of months. They want to actually be influencing games on a week-to-week basis. And you know, maybe international teammates, maybe friends in the game, they may not be playing at the same high standard. They may be playing at clubs further down the league, but they're playing. And I think that's the quandary that some young players get stuck in. And I think that's kind of where Masonda's head's at the minute. Whether he's justified in that, I can't honestly speak with any certainty myself, because I think there's a lot of moving parts in that. But I understand his frustration. I can sympathise, if not empathise.
Dave, this one comes from James, I want to say Sweet or Sweat. Sweet. What is the easiest way to get into football soccer stats?
Just look at stats on the internet. Maybe go to sites like Who Scored, Squawker. That's the first step. And obviously, then you got to watch the game in a sort of stats background, look out for things like who you think's completed the most passes, and take yourself on, you know, potentially a little bit further, diving into the data, rewatching games and that type of thing. But yeah, it's all about what the data means in a way, because you can say whatever you want with data, but you need real meaning from it. And I think that's the difficulty, pairing football stats up with things that are applicable to analysis and to so forth. So it's just like, it's like training. Just watch loads of football, that's all you need to do, and watch football with stats, and then you'll start to build a picture and a story, like science.
That, like science, it is like a science in a way, isn't it? Because you're looking for, you're looking,
well, it is. Statistics
is
a science.
For patterns, you're looking for, yeah, exactly. That's what, yeah, well, I suppose it is a science.
Oh, it's fucking not, hell, the train's here. Bollocks.
Of course.
Sorry, guys.
Part of being a good coach is being on time. Dave is, of course, also understanding that.
Oh, God, it's gone.
Is it gone?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, bollocks. I think what I've also learned, and I don't know if my opinion is welcome here, but I think partly what I've learned is watching football with the stats in front of you, and then looking,
oh my God,
looking at the screen, and then also looking up and looking at the stats, definitely helps you, because you get a very practical idea of what you're watching, rather than sort of, you know, there's a lot of sort of nebulous stats around on Twitter, and I always find that a little bit difficult to sort of put onto a player. And at the same time, I think some people put stats out there because obviously it's part of their job, and some people have to tweet or put stats out or, you know, use them, and sometimes it can feel a bit more like a barrier to entry than something that's actually handy. Some people in the industry are good at it, some in the people in the industry just sort of throw out nebulous stats. It's well worth finding people who are interested in digging down into them, and having discussions with them as well, without boring the hell out of them. We also can go through this weekend's games, where there will be a lot of great moments. Chris, have you got the app there, the Fan League?
I do. Give me 1 second.
Of course, you can hear the ease with which Chris is opening the app and then beginning to place his predictions.
Do, 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 do.
See how easy it sounds?
That is like the second time in a week where I've been walking up the track and a train has just done one on me. Absolutely done.
Jesus, Dave, I mean, get off the track for a start, mate.
I was trying to catch it, Lawrence. I ran about half a mile after it, but it just didn't stop.
I've heard some terrible
bloody
stories.
Bloody selfish
about.
Train.
I know.
Right. Okay. What
Dave, to be
here?
Fair, did the train leave early, or were you a little late?
No, I left early, mate. I have to complain to TfL.
That's Transport for London, just in case you don't live in London, because, you know, not everyone knows what TfL is. But
I've got your games here.
Excellent, Chris. Read out the first game. We would love to hear it.
The first game for our decision-making skills is Sunderland hosting Queen's Park Rangers at 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon.
Good God. Well, Chris, you, being up in the Northeast, you're probably going to know the most about this. What would your prediction be for this one?
Looking at the numbers here, a lot of people think Sunderland could take this.
Wow. Okay.
I can understand that. QPR haven't had a terrible start to the season. Sunderland most definitely have. Saying that,
yeah,
Sunderland haven't actually won a game in 2017 at home.
Yeah, and obviously before the international break, they had quite a difficult run as well. I think they lost 5-2 to Ipswich in their own league. Obviously, they lost to Cardiff City. They drew with Preston. Obviously, also Moyes, one of Moyes' old teams. And then just had a terrible, terrible run before that. I mean, I can just keep going back and back and back, and it doesn't seem to get much better than since the Carlisle United win in the Carabao Cup, which was weeks ago now.
Well, the last time that they actually won at home, Barack Obama was president of the United States, and Alan Pardew was manager of Crystal Palace.
Well, those were better days.
Yeah, I think for one of those two parties, those were better days.
I'm going to say...
Imagine if they swap jobs for a day. Imagine where Crystal Palace would be now.
God, imagine how big the statue of Alan Pardew would be. Sunderland to win. The next game is Sheffield United hosting Ipswich Town.
Chris, are you 100% sure these are the games that we have to be previewing?
I mean, this is what it says, game week 9.
Okay, fair enough. Sorry, who?
Have I clicked Sheffield the right... United. Hang on, just so I've got the right thing. I load up the app and I click the play button in the middle and then it gives me 13 games, is that right?
Yeah, 13 games. And those are the 13 games we're going on.
These are the 13 games.
Yeah, obviously so. I mean, Sheffield United, I'm looking
Chris
through Stark, their past.
Chris Wilder, this, playing three at the back.
This is how we play Fan League. Fairly patchy form, but in the games that they have played well, then things have been going pretty exceptionally well for the Blades, I want to say. Ipswich Town have also had quite patchy form, getting good wins over the likes of Bolton and then, of course, Sunderland as well, but losing to the likes of Bristol City and, of course, Leeds United in recent games. Chris, what are you saying for this one?
I reckon Sheffield United. I'm going to go with the other players on this one.
I reckon Ipswich.
For my own edification here, under the number one, what does 83% and 75% mean? I've heard Adam reference this before.
It's a great question.
I think it means Adam's that 83% of the people chose one side and
75%.
No, but it's all...
Oh, there's a 75. Okay, I didn't hear the 75 part. So 83%
of people chosen to win 75% of the time. No, there's 83 and 75. You know what? You'll probably have to cut this out, but do you know what that means? I've heard Adam use these numbers before, like, oh, 83% of players think. But how can you have two percentages? This doesn't make sense.
2%, you know what? It's just a fun app. Just go bloody use it. It's not hard.
Anyway, the majority think Sheffield United are going to win.
Excellent. What's the next fixture, Chris? Please tell me some of them in the Premier League.
hang on, we should probably cut this. You know, this is a terrible advert.
It's a great advert. You've just got to get your head around it. And the point is that Adam normally is the one with the organisation skills. And Dave's just missed the train.
Oh, my God.
Don't even know if Dave's still on the call, to be quite... Oh, Dave is still here. Yeah.
Sound like a family that Channel 5 would do a programme on. I'm going to go Sheffield United on this one.
I'm going Ipswich.
I like Chris Wilder. He's put a good little side together down Sheffield, playing three at the back sometimes. I like him.
Good. Nico, you get the casting vote.
Ipswich, yeah.
Excellent. Chris, you're outvoted.
Have I got to pick? Oh, bloody it. What? Do you even watch the Championship? Leeds Reading is the next game.
Okay.
Then we get up to the Premier League, don't worry.
Okay, excellent. Okay, well, this is where the challenge comes, I think.
You know what
they say
about
Leeds? Yeah, you really do, don't you? You really know what they say about... They play in all white. They've lost their last two games, but before that, they won their previous two. So they've lost three in their last five. Whereas, if you go to Reading and look at their fixtures, which I am currently doing, you'd currently find they're not on the greatest tear. So I'm going to go for Leeds in this one, just based on form.
Yes. Amazingly, thanks, Chris. Very few people are predicting a draw or a Reading win on this one. Under 10% for both think that it will either be a draw or a Reading win.
Interesting. That's certainly an interesting one.
So we're going to go Leeds and agree with 89% of people.
Leeds.
Next up, it's another team in white, Tottenham, and they are hosting Bournemouth on Saturday at 3 o'clock at White Hart Lane. Well, not
this
Wembley.
This one's quite exciting. I think it's at Wembley. I think that Tottenham actually have quite a good record against Bournemouth, and probably for good reason. So I'm going to go a Tottenham win because, well, I just like Tottenham, don't I?
Nico?
I'm going to go ahead with Tottenham. I think it's going to be similar to the Huddersfield game where, you know, they try to engage them. They try and play the same style or a similar style as they do. So I'll probably go Tottenham.
Good.
Okay, you agree with 98% of players.
Yeah.
Swansea Huddersfield is next.
Good. It's not, Chris, you said a few weeks ago that it wasn't looking great for Swansea. What was your thinking behind that? And does it look much better for Huddersfield?
I kind of base that on the fact that Swansea don't look terribly defensively. But from an attacking standpoint, they don't look like they can really muster much. And the synergy from back to front is an issue for me when I watch them as well. There's not much fluency. I think Clement has done a good job of maybe, you know, tightening up the back, but that's at a major consequence of what they do in the final third. So I'm not terribly, excited by the prospect of Swansea, and I don't tip them to score many goals this season.
So we're going to go with a Huddersfield win for this one. 2-1 Huddersfield, in my eyes.
Well, it's the thing you got to keep in mind is it is at Swansea. So we obviously saw how Huddersfield performed against Crystal Palace. So that could be an interesting deciding factor when trying to work this out. Nico, do you have any strong opinions?
I think Huddersfield would probably win pretty heavily. I think in the sense of compactness and advancing the play, you're right. In the sense that I don't think Paul Clement has his first 11 and sort of his preferred guys and how they want to play exactly down. And with that, there are a lot of weaknesses to expose against a team, a Huddersfield team, that's very good in their pressing action. So I think it'll be a pretty heavy Huddersfield win if I had to guess.
Now we're really seeing how fun this app is. Chris, next fixture.
Just real quickly, Chris, is your mic rubbing up against something? It's like
I'm that's gonna, fine. He's walking.
Crackling.
Go for it, Chris.
Swansea. Yeah. So we're going for Huddersfield. Interestingly, not a lot of people think that's going to be the score. Man City Stoke is next up.
Tale of two cities.
Yeah, I mean, it's abundantly clear who players of this game think's going to win this one. Man City cleans it. 100% of people.
Wow, okay. I'm also going to go Man City on this one. Nico, you'll also go Man City for very evident reasons.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Stoke have not necessarily been fantastic this season. They've been trying out the back three under Mark Hughes. They've done some interesting things with that. And then some games it's been somewhat successful, and other games where they've missed defenders. I think they've been hit or miss with sort of the best things that strategy brings to mind. But I think regardless of whether they line up in a three back or a four back, I think Manchester City will just go back to the form that they enjoyed right before the international break. So I'm going Manchester City.
Interesting stat.
That's all cut and dry. Next up is Crystal Palace against Chelsea, and this is at Selhurst Park. Again, another frighteningly high statistic of people who think this is going to be a Chelsea win.
I'm going to be straight with you here. I think it's going to be a real issue for Roy Hodgson and his men, because they still haven't scored, and he could be the second manager after, I believe it is his predecessor, to have four games in a row where he loses and the four games in a row where he doesn't score. It doesn't look great for him against Chelsea either, does it? So I'm going to go for a Chelsea win here.
Nico, are you in agreement?
Yeah, I think it'll still be an interesting game to watch, because obviously they're missing, or Chelsea are missing Alvaro Morata. So to see how they cope with that, and whether they use Pedro and Hazard, or Pedro and Willian, or they get Michy Batshuayi some minutes and see how they utilize him differently, because obviously he is a different striker to Morata, will be interesting. So I think regardless of the fact that I think a lot of people are assuming Chelsea will win, which I also agree with, it'll still be interesting tactically to see how that sort of panders out and how Conte is adjusting the system to who he adjusts it to.
I will take that as a yes. Burnley against West Ham at Turf Moor. Now, the players, yeah, they're a little bit on the fence on this one, and I think this is why a good portion have shifted for a draw. The majority think Burnley, not a terrible decision. Burnley are good at home, we know this, but a significant portion of also prompted for a draw. Any initial thoughts, gents?
Well, I think Burnley, because I like Sean Dyche and his men, and I think there's just a lot of good a lot of good shit going on down there.
Okay, so Lawrence has gone for a Burnley win. Nico?
I'll also go for a Burnley win. Like you said, they're good at home, and West Ham are sort of disorganized, so, you know.
Remember, if you think we're speaking irrationally here and you guys think you know better, then get on the app and you can join us to predict as well. And maybe show us that you know better.
Yeah.
That'd be good. Anything else?
Put your money where your mouth is.
Exactly.
We've got, hang on, a few more. Midlands Derby, Wolves against Villa.
I'll take Wolves on this one. This season there's obviously improvements to be made, and it's difficult to gel a squad together. But I think they're going to outdo a Villa team who will be reminded almost constantly of the fact that they are Aston Villa in the Championship. I know Villa. I think actually before the international break, Villa won three in a row, whereas Wolves actually, I think they won three of the last five. I'm reading this. So I'm still going to go for a Wolves win, because I think that Wolves are one of the stronger teams.
Yeah, they got some lovely players, Wolves.
They're only four points ahead of Aston Villa, though. So.
Yeah, they've played some lovely stuff. They absolutely destroyed Burton just before the international break.
4-0, yeah. Nil.
Poor
Brewers.
And Hotter and Neves, you've got talent in abundance. Amazingly, this one is just flowing in the direction of Wolves, so it looks like we're going for the popular vote. Next up is Watford against Arsenal.
Nice. I'm going to go Arsenal in this one. I think Arsenal are going to win 2-1. I like what Watford are doing at the moment, but I think Arsenal find themselves in a much better place than we've previously seen them. And I don't know, I think that coming off the back of the international break and the way that Wenger's going to have had some time to implement further his ideas with some of those people in the squad, I think we're going to see an Arsenal win here. Although I might actually be completely wrong. Obviously, that's what predictions are.
Nico, any opinions?
Yeah, I think Watford will come away winners on this one. I've really enjoyed how Marco Silva has done things with Watford this season. Obviously, they progressed the ball a lot vertically on, you know, down the wing. And I think in these situations with Arsenal's, whether it be the 4-2-3-1 or the 3-4-3 system, they can be pulled out. Their press can be pulled out way too far wide, and there can be a lot of space to exploit in the middle. And there are some good players on Watford that can take advantage of that. So I think Watford will come away the winners here.
Nicely done.
Now, I don't know if this is because there's maybe a lot of Arsenal fans that play Fan League.
Probably.
Or there's just a new sense of confidence. But the majority think Arsenal are going to win this.
I think Arsenal will shed it. I think it'll be one of those games where we say Arsenal didn't play great, but they got through with a result. We'll see them outside the ground, and people will be saying, "Well, you know, still not good enough, but they still got the result." I think Watford they've pushed quite a few teams. They pushed Liverpool the opening day of the season. It's not that Watford are bad. It's that I just think that Arsenal have found a new self belief, and I think that's going to be fairly key in this game.
Arsenal, it is then. Next up, whoops.
By the way, I've just seen a lovely new kit from River Plate. That is a lovely new kit that Adidas and River Plate have got. Anyway, go on.
Next up, got the Brian Clough Derby. Derby hosting Nottingham Forest.
Nice. I'm going to go, that's actually a tricky one. Because
Forest.
And try and find Forest in the first place. But yeah, this one's the only Championship game on the Sunday. And I think Forest have a fairly patchy form recently. Yeah, in fact, they've only won one of their last five games. And even before that, they had a terrible run of form as well. Whereas, if you look at Derby, I'm going to go off just purely off fixtures on this. Derby had also been in pretty poor form, but they were managing to get a lot of draws. I'll go. It's a local derby, so can we sort of say?
Do you want the help of the fans?
Yeah. No, not yet. I don't want to ask the audience. You know what? I'm going to go Forest just because I like him.
Okay, Nico.
I will also go with Forest. You know.
You know what they say about Forest?
you need, I mean, the Robin Hood and stuff like that, so, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a thing. The players have tipped Derby to win this one.
Of course they have. Derby got three draws just before the international break.
You're looking at about 7 out of 10 players thinking Derby take it, two out of ten thinking it's a draw, and 1 out of 10 thinking Forest take it. So we're going to pump for Forest.
We're in the minority, but we will be right. Come Sunday, you'll see what us Foresters say.
I've locked that in there. Brighton against Everton is a 1:30 kickoff on the 15th, so Sunday game. Actually kicks off just after Derby, Nottingham Forest. So Brighton are at home, Everton are in trouble, you could argue.
Everton are obviously in trouble, but I think they'll still get away with a narrow win. I think 1-0.
I would probably say scored, or I would probably say 0-0. I'd probably say draw.
Okay, so I've got the deciding vote. Well, they're not overwhelming favourites according to the players, but 6 out of 10 think Everton will take it. So
people do seem to go a lot on name here.
As Adam has
Should we bet against
Adam has told me many, many times, we can hedge, so we can hedge for an Everton win, draw a hedge for a win.
Yes, this is
let's
true.
Let's hedge. Hedge, Chris, hedge.
I've hedged. Feels this wonderful.
I thought I could see something.
Went right up there. Southampton against Newcastle is the last game, and that is 4 o'clock at St Mary's.
I've already put a little bet on this one. I reckon Newcastle are going to win it. I think they'll take it 1-0.
You're a betting man, Lawrence.
I am now. Wow. I put a little bet on this, and I think Newcastle are going to take it because I like Benitez. He's playing against one of his old players, and I think Rafa's going to come away with a 1-0 win. I know Southampton's midfield looks strong, but I think Benitez is going to send them out there to be combative. And this is the kind of game that Newcastle need to get points. So, 1-0 Newcastle.
Interestingly, I've just realised that the two percentages refer to the community thinks and what the pundits think.
Ah!
Now, with that revelation, none of the pundits think Newcastle will win. None of the pundits thinks Southampton will win. Half of the community does. Whereas a third of the pundits think Newcastle will win, but just over two-thirds think that it will end in a draw.
Wow, okay. So this is, I mean, I've gone for wins in all these games. I'm still going to go with that. Newcastle win 1-0. Thank you, Matt Ritchie.
Okay, Nico, any desire to randomly change that or argue against it?
No, I agree with Lawrence. I think it's a type of game that Benitez is well capable of winning. Pellegrino has not gotten his Southampton side finishing in front of goal quite yet. I haven't seen them too much, so I'm not sure if it's quite because of the type of chances they're creating or the consistency of chances they're creating, but I think you said it was at Newcastle, correct?
It's at Southampton.
That does change things. So maybe I will go for a Southampton win.
Oh, man. I locked it in there.
This is the worst set of predictions I've ever.
Well, in theory, we could hedge our bets.
No.
Having recently discovered hedging.
We're going for a win.
We could.
So many jokes to be made.
We could go for a Southampton or a Newcastle win.
And a second Newcastle win. I'm so sure of it, Chris.
Okay. Nico.
So no hedging on this one. When your heart's in it,
I take back everything I said. Everything I said only applies to Newcastle at home. So Newcastle away, not so much. Southampton win, 2-1.
I mean, saying that, wow. Newcastle beats Swansea away, you know? They haven't looked terrible away.
Swansea's different, you know?
They push bright and hard. You could argue there was some, you know. You've already said I can't hedge, so I've got to pick one of you.
When Brian isn't in the crowd, you have the fear factor taken away. So
Brian's not been in the crowd for years.
See, whichever one I pick, it's going to make like I seem like I like that person more.
Yeah,
it's not true. It's just a coincidence.
We all know who
I like. Neither of you.
Right, it's locked in.
What'd you pick?
What did you pick?
I will tell you all at a very intimate dinner in 2 weeks' time.
Wow, okay, fair enough.
I'm kidnapping Newcastle.
Newcastle.
Benitez. Yeah, Benitez is great.
Of course, he's backing the boys. Well done, Chris.
Right, so that's just to check over. We've gone for a Sunderland win, a Ipswich win, a Leeds win, a Tottenham win, a Huddersfield win, a Man City win, a Chelsea win, a Burnley win, a Wolves win, an Arsenal win, a Forest win, Everton to win or draw, and Newcastle to win.
Really good work, guys. Now, of course, let's finish off the podcast on an exciting point from this week. The most exciting point of this week was watching Messi revive his side. Everyone's gone the hell on about it. Yeah. He puts the team on his back, or the team jumped on his back, or whatever you want to say. The point is, at this point, I want to talk to you about the most incredible comebacks you've ever seen, thanks to players, not only individually, but sort of reviving their own teams. Who have you seen do that for your own sides? Because I don't think Messi is an absolute exception here. We've seen a lot of players do it. And at some point, you realise it can very often be to the detriment of the team. It's going to be lovely to have him at the World Cup, but will it serve them well in the long term? Probably not. And a lot of people are saying that's down to them almost having too many options, et cetera, but my nomination is obviously Steven Gerrard. I saw him again at the Wembley Cup just the other day and realised why he was still so good. And then he was fantastic for Liverpool years and years ago, but too often tried to put Liverpool on his back and it didn't serve the team well. So for that reason, I'm saying Steven Gerrard. Anyone else got anyone like that for their own team or any memories similar?
I remember when I was a kid, Newcastle were losing 3-1 to Leicester City, and an Alan Shearer hat-trick helped them win 4-3 in the dying minutes.
Wow, yeah, that's great, isn't it?
That's the one I can think of most in terms of like a genuine, he just picked them up on his shoulders and carried them.
Yeah, but he was a different kind of captain, I guess, wasn't he, Chris? Because he wasn't always the sort of, I'll carry this team sort. He sort of led by example. And it seems as if other people took up that example as well. Am I right?
Yeah, I would agree with that. He was very much do as I do, not as I say kind of thing, which is you know, I would say sometimes a rare quality in football. A lot of people set the standard but don't always match it. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for that.
Nicely done. Nico, what about you?
I think for a lot of Manchester City fans, it's obviously the title-winning comeback. But for me, more recently, I think the memory that sticks out in my mind is last year's performance at Barcelona, or was it? No, it was at Manchester City, where we went down 1-0, I think pretty early on, to a really nice Messi goal, and then we won 3-1. And it was just a really nice moment for the club, because I think we had gotten Barcelona in the Champions League in the early stages so consistently, and we'd always been either knocked out by them or they had helped knock us out in either the group stages, because they tend to beat us. And, it, you know, we went toe-to-toe with that Barcelona team, and although obviously they haven't been great in the past two seasons or so, it was still sort of that moment where Manchester City kind of feel like they're continuing to push themselves into the relevance of European greatness to some extent. And it was a really cool game to watch. It's really exciting. It was back and forth, and it was a great game.
Excellent stuff. I think Dave's gone, but good luck to him in his coaching. Everyone likes Dave. We all want to see him do well as a coach. Obviously with his reputation as well, it's good, you know. We just want to help further that. Let's put it that way. Again, self-belief and confidence, very, very critical. It's been good to have you guys.
Convicted.
Yeah, probably best not to joke about these sort of things with Dave actually working with kids now.
I wasn't talking about that.
Yeah. Anyway, Chris, where can people go find you?
At KHENEAGE.
And then Nico, what about you?
You can find me at Nico_O'Morales on Twitter.
You're never convicted. Anyway, it's been good to have you guys today. You can go find me at Lozcast, LOZCAST. You can also go and find Dave at StatmanDave. That's StatmanDave. And of course, you can find Adam Boltwood in the description of the podcast as well, quite literally. Although this week you'll find him in Orlando. Orlando, see you guys next week on Monday when we'll be reviewing all the weekend's action. It's good to have the Premier League back. And we'll also be taking some of your questions and views from the weekend. Until then, enjoy the weekend's football. And don't forget to join us on Fan League, where I think the league is now wide open. So you can go join it, see how well we're doing, see how well you guys are doing relatively to that. And enjoy it. See you Monday. Bye, Mother Brunters.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.